Now, a little later, we'll talk to Mary Favier, President of the Irish College of GPs, on how these new community hubs will operate. Also, the details on the shooting of Robbie Lawler, the notorious gangland figure. He was shot dead in Belfast on Saturday. We'll hear from the Sunday World's crime editor, Nicola Tallant. And also, Brian O'Connell has been out on patrol with the Gardaí, monitoring social distancing out and about. We'll hear from Brian a little later. But now we're going to talk football, because a new era of Irish soccer has begun as Stephen Kenny has started his reign as the Irish football manager over the weekend. He was due to take over on the 1st of August from Mick McCarthy following the Euro 2020 campaign. But those plans, of course, as we know, were thrown into disarray as a result of the postponement of the tournament until next year and the rescheduling of Ireland's playoff against Slovakia. And Kenny, I think, as it's true to say, has hit the ground running by announcing Damien Duff, Alan Kelly and Keith Andrews as his backroom team. For more, I am joined on the line by RTÉ pundit and former Ireland international Richie Sadler. Good morning, Richie.
Morning, Sean.
Before we talk about Stephen Kenny, sum up Mick McCarthy's reign. I see Ken Early in the sports page of the Irish Times says, really, it didn't amount to a whole lot.
Well, I suppose the campaign lasted for 8 games, and I don't think it was an ideal circumstances for anyone to take the job. He had no friendly beforehand to prepare the team in any way, so he just took the squad a few days before the opener, I think, which was against Gibraltar. We had 3 wins in 8 games, which wasn't great, and with the opportunity, or the plan was to hopefully finish in the top two to qualify for the Euros, and of course we didn't do so. I don't think anyone can reflect on that campaign and feel aggrieved that we didn't finish in the top two. I don't think we did enough to warrant automatic qualification. So it's, I find it hard to be overly critical of Mick's reign, because I don't think the playing squad that he had to work with is certainly of a standard the previous managers have had, and the morale and the mood and the general atmosphere in Irish football at the time he took the job, if you remember, was rock bottom. I don't remember it being as bad as it was, but overall I think more disappointing than a success.
Yeah.
And the situation we're in now, actually, just to clear up for people, we're in a playoff now for the Euros on the back of the Nations League campaign, which was managed by Martin O'Neill. And just to remind people how that went, we didn't win a game, we finished bottom, we got relegated, and Martin lost his job because of it. So we're in a playoff, not because of our recent form or our performances. We're here because of a fairly convoluted set of circumstances that UEFA came up with to give teams multiple chances to try and qualify. So we're not in the playoff because of anything that the team or Mick McCarthy did over those 8 games of the group stages.
Right. What will be different about Stephen Kenny?
We're hoping there will be a lot different. I think one of the things, when you hear Stephen speak about football, when you hear Mick speak about football, you do pick up differences. I worked with Stephen in the RTÉ studios, commenting on matches and analysing matches, and I've sat next to him in stadiums watching matches, and he says this in interviews openly as well, and his teams reflect this and how they've played. He spends a lot of time talking about the importance of keeping the football and possession football, and the various different ways of controlling a match and approaching it that way. We don't hear Irish managers in the past, we haven't heard any of them talk about that at all. So that's one thing we're hoping that Stephen can transfer from just talks and words to actual performances. But what we're really hoping for, and I think this is the crucial thing, whatever about Stephen's ideas and how the game should be played or whatever his backroom staff can bring, the biggest difference we're all hoping for is that the talented youngsters who have been doing well at underage levels or first team levels or lower league levels or even Premier League levels over the last 18 or 12 months, and those that have done well for Stephen's under 21 team, we're hoping that their development continues in the next few years. Because if it does, it means Stephen will have a significantly different group of players to choose from. You can be the best manager in the world, but it's going to come down to the players you've got to choose.
And from what you're saying, he reckons he can play a more sophisticated style of football, and you know, use the possession to greater effect. But does he? I mean, with these new players, can they deliver that kind of an approach with success?
Look, all these are kind of unanswerable at the moment, because what we're looking at, we can all rattle off to the names: Adam Ida, Troy Parrott, Jason Malumbi, Dara O'Shea at West Brom, even young Aaron Connolly. They're all talented players, they've all got potential, and you can add another 4 or 5 names of lads who've played for the under-21s. And what we're hoping then is that in the next year or two, their club form and their club progress will continue. Now, this is going to be beyond Stephen Kenny's control. Stephen Kenny can't dictate how they do at their club, but if they don't progress at their clubs, if they don't deal with all the off the field stuff as well as the on the field stuff that young footballers have to deal with, they're not going to come through to the level that we need them to be to play in the senior team. And I know there's lots of different ways to explain Stephen's approach. I don't think there's anything overly sophisticated about it in terms to, by comparison to previous managers.
What do you think of the backroom team that he's announced? Damien Duff, Alan Kelly and Keith Andrews, and it looks like there mightn't actually be a role for Robbie Keane.
Yeah, I suppose let's talk about Robbie first. I do think that this is one issue which has been very poorly handled. A statement went out by the FAI yesterday calling out and confirming that Stephen's backroom staff was what it is, and confirmed that the under-21s would be run by Jim Crawford and others. And there was no mention of Robbie Keane, either in the new role that he has or that he had left. And now with the really weird scenario of seeing his wife take to social media to talk about the fact that they were completely in the dark about what his role was. And Gary Owens was on radio yesterday saying that they're still open to talking to Robbie's agent and Robbie about a possible role. And that's all fairly shabbily handled, to be honest, because he had a 4-year contract that he signed 2 years ago. So it was 2 years left to run. We believe the salary is about $250,000 a year. So that's $500,000. That's a lot of money that they're contracted to pay this one person. And they've taken to the radio and released public statements without having clarified what his role is going to be in private. And I'm not just saying this because this is Robbie and he's a high profile person. I think there was a better way of handling this. But I think what is positive is that he's not being thrust upon Stephen Kenny. I was sceptical of the situation where a new manager would be given an assistant manager that he didn't choose. So I'm pleased that that seems to be a scenario we've avoided.
Okay, well, look, let's hope it works out well. But before I let you go, just one or two other points. Across the water, we see that the Professional Footballers Association is refusing members will refuse to take any pay cuts, despite the fact that they're not actually doing it. They're not working at the moment. And we see football clubs, not least of them Liverpool, who are running away with the Premier League at the moment, saying that they're going to use a government's job retention scheme, along with Newcastle, Tottenham, Bournemouth and Norwich and other clubs, to pay their backroom staff or their the guys who, if you like, you know, sort of clean the stadia and, you know, just do the ordinary run-of-the-mill jobs.
None of them are coming across looking particularly well, to be honest. And there's a series of discussions happening between the Players' Union, the Premier League, the FAI, or the FA, and I assume the broadcasting companies are somewhere in the background as well. The club's position is they stand to lose approximately $750 million if the fixtures aren't played for the remaining ones from this season. So the clubs are saying we're going to lose massively, so we need to share in those losses. And the players are turning around and saying, okay, but you asking us to take a wage cut takes about $200 million off the tax bill, and the government could use that money for the NHS. So the players are open to the possibility of taking less money, but they want more control over where it goes. So
it's an unusual thing, though, isn't it, for players who earn an absolute fortune to be crying effectively crocodile tears on behalf of the tax man. I mean, the government ministers, they want them to take these cuts.
Yeah, well, another point is that if you're taking this solely on salary, why is this focus on footballers? Why aren't we talking about bankers? Why aren't we talking about people who work in the financial industry who earn huge salaries and massive bonuses?
So are they being pressured unfairly, Richie, are they?
I think one of the British minister, was at Hancock the other day, decided just in a very populist, cheap move to try and bring up the footballers and their salaries to say that they could be doing more. And the point I've heard from, I think, Wayne Rooney and others has said, well, actually, if you may pay more attention and the thing that you're meant to do and get the right equipment and support to the health staff, that would be put us all in a far better position than you sitting here making us scapegoats. So I don't think anyone's coming at it particularly well. I think the better thing would be to wait until all the discussions have taken place in private and they can come out with an announcement. But that wasn't possible because of the politicians just deciding that footballers are the ones we should point at and blame for this situation.
And finally, how are you getting on yourself? I mean, a lot of the stuff you would normally do, giving talks in schools, that kind of thing, isn't happening at the moment.
Yeah, schools are all shut. I suppose the biggest difference to my life is I have a psychotherapy practice, which obviously I've had to close. So I can adjust and offer therapy to my clients by using Skype or Zoom calls or over the phone. Some adapt quite well to that. Others aren't interested in that, I understand, for those reasons. So that's one big difference. I suppose the other one is I won't say stuck at home. We're safe at home. Like, there's people in a lot worse positions than myself and my wife. We're sitting here at home with two dogs, and we're safe and well.
Well, look, that's good to know. Thank you indeed for joining us. That's Richie Sadler there, RT pundit, former Ireland international and psychotherapist. We'll take a break.